Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome along to Beyond Bitcoin, a program mostly about other things than Bitcoin itself. My name is Derek Graham. I'm the CEO of Portal Asset Management, and my friend and colleague is with me today, Nitin Gower. Hello, Nitin.
Hey, Derek. My name is Nitin. I serve as Director of Financial Sciences and Digital Assets. I also work in capacity of CTO and Head of Research at Portal Asset Management. And what a week, Derek. It's never a dull moment in our industry, and glad to discuss yet another amazing week and what happened this week, but with a little different stance with DAOs. So back to you.
Fantastic. So like normal, we're two gentlemen chatting away about the space of digital assets, digital currencies, and the philosophy wrapped around those. We're not providing investment advice, of course. But today, Nitin turned around and said, look, I'm doing a lot of work in DAOs at the moment. So he said, let's have a conversation around DAOs, which is a fascinating space. So I just thought I'd provide a brief definition of what a DAO is. And a DAO is the word concept, really, which means a way or a sense of path or a road ahead in ancient Chinese philosophy. That's not the DAO we're talking about today. However, it's nice to have that some sort of associated with this. The DAO we're really talking about today is a decentralized autonomous organization. So the definition of that is broadly, it acts as an organization represented by rules encoded as a transcript computer program, controlled by the organization members and not influenced by a central government or central bureaucracy of a corporation. As the rules are embedded into code, no managers are needed, thus removing any bureaucracy or hierarchy or hurdles. It's truly autonomous. So as inspired by the decentralization of cryptocurrencies itself, and a group of developers came up with the idea of a decentralized autonomous organization way back in 2016, and they created the very first DAO. And things were rosy and exciting and then went wrong, didn't they?
They did.
Maybe we'll start with that and we'll go along from there, Nitin. What went wrong and how much did it cost somebody?
No, the first DAO hack, in at least my recollection of that in 2016, 2017, as you mentioned, was about 55 million. And it made headlines because there was a big sum. This is about almost, early days of blockchain, and anything that went wrong with blockchain was seen as, look, it's risky and you shouldn't be doing it. And of course, we continued moving that whole, progressing through the entire journey in terms of what we have built today with decentralized finance. But it was 55 million. And at the end of the day, I think it wasn't a hack or anything. It wasn't an effect or impact on security of blockchain. It was just a fact that the DAO, which is nothing but a blockchain that can run code, the code allowed you to sort of create a sub-account, and the sub-account allowed you to be able to transfer funds instead of individuals. So, we all have wallets from certain sort of transactions into those sub-accounts. So it was not exactly illegal. It was not a wrongdoing. It was just a flaw in the code, and the code allowed you to do it. Someone understood that, took advantage of it, and 55 million was siphoned. Wow. But the interesting thing was that all that was detected within a minute and a half, as opposed to the existing financial crimes that we see, which takes 3 months, 6 months, 1 year, 10 years, in case of all the Panama Paradise papers that we've discussed in the past. It was instantly seen as a challenge, and steps were taken to stop that drain. And while it was a flaw in the code, and we debated in terms of code being the law and the entire thesis of DAO to disintermediate financial institutions, and financial institutions came out and saying, look, this is why we have counterparties. This is why we have the legal system. But the beauty of that was that the community saw it all happening in real time, and they took steps to stop it. And it's now, I think, been 6+ years, and we're in the sixth year after the hack, and we still see some vulnerabilities. But I think we've come a long way. And I think we should spend some time discussing the journey from that first DAO hack to where we are today, and much more advanced vulnerabilities that we're seeing. And every time we see something going wrong, the community comes together to plug that hole, which is very powerful in its own sense, I think.
You're right. And what's extraordinary about this space consistently is the speed at which it works. So if you could imagine this being some sort of a central superannuation organization where $55 million was stolen, in Australia, that would form the basis of probably a royal commission. it could take 3 to 5 years to determine what went wrong, who went wrong, and possibly who should go to jail in it. And then ultimately, someone does probably go to jail for that. In this world, this is found out in 90 seconds. It's shut down by the community itself. The community very quickly acquiesces around the issue of turning around and saying, well, how do we resolve this problem? The future coding is resolved. Future DAOs are created. And over the last, 5 years that have followed, many DAOs have been created since. No Royal Commission. No one went to jail. Yes, true. But the whole community moved on and great development occurred at a rapid pace without that being a showstopper. And sure. So often in government environments, this need for punishment, this need for regulation, it satisfies a certain urge we have, but on the other hand, doesn't do a great job of moving the growth of a solution ahead. So you talked about before, how do you put a DAO into the legacy or real world? And it reminded me, I read an article by James Ayres in July of this year in the Australian Financial Review. And the article reads as follows. The digital finance industry wants a Senate committee to recommend the creation of an entirely new type of legal entity under the Corporations Act, known as a DAO. The Digital Law Association suggested formal recognition of a new decentralized models for corporate governance, where a board of directors is replaced by an internet community. So before you throw your hands up in the air and go, for crying out loud, why are we getting centralization involved with this? This is the Digital Law Association. It does make some sense. And they're normally on the side of logic here. And that is that the senior lawyers and developers working in decentralized finance say recognition of a DAO limited corporate structure would create legal personality. So project governors could contract in the real economy. And that's quite a challenge because unless you've got a legal person, an entity, it's very hard to contract in the real economy. They also said that they can create limited liability status, which will prevent each and every Australian member, in this case, of a DAO being potentially liable for losses incurred by decisions made by a member of the community, as the DAOs in Australia are currently construed as partnerships or unincorporated associations. So I don't get the sense that the government's desperately trying to control or centralize. What I'm getting the sense is they're trying to turn around and say, well, how do we make a DAO some sort of a person for legal purposes so that it can enact what it's designed to do? And I think that's happened in other countries too, Nitin.
Yeah, and that's a great point, Derek. And I'll draw a few analogies before we get into what that limited liability company means. We've done this for corporations. Corporations have legal status. Again, this has been the long-standing issue in the U.S. in terms of campaign, contribution reforms, where companies are treated as individuals, the same rights and the ability for them to be able to pay for a campaign contribution is like a First Amendment, which is right to free speech because you're expressing yourself in terms of support. And you're sort of taking this sort of fictitious entry and giving them a status, a legal status. And I think in many cases, and I think the state of Wyoming made headlines when the legislature approved the first of a kind bill that sort of grants the legal company status to a decentralized autonomous organization that operates on a blockchain, provided they are organized as a Wyoming limited liability company. The bill, which is similar language to what you mentioned, I think, in Australian context, is codified as a Wyoming Decentralized Autonomous Organization Supplement, applies only to DAOs organized under the Wyoming Limited Liability Company. So you see how these digital artifacts and digital smart contracts, to me, it's no different, Derek, the term that you have been using along our entire journey of this as we share our thoughts, is it on-ramp and off-ramp into the existing traditional finance banking system, is to provide an avenue to still allow DAO to be able to solve a problem, but provide a layer of accountability on top. So going back to the hack that we just discussed, let's say if this hack were to happen with a legally registered decentralized autonomous organization supplement, which is an entity that's registered with a state or a country, you would have to have certain sort of charter that allows you to deal with the incumbency of a DAO and deal with some of the challenges, prudential challenges of how do you maintain a DAO and the treasury of the DAO and so on and so forth. And so I think to me, it's forcing this, it's not, and I've also debated this, that why does DAO need to have a legal structure? It's meant to be decentralized. We are, the entire premise of this industry is to not have a centralized entity run these things. But I still think there's merit to it, where you can still bring amazing projects and sort of bring the digital intermediaries, move away from the traditional financial services and intermediary, and bring the digital intermediaries, still taking away the cost structures of maintaining of large corporation, human resources and people behind it. And these digital intermediaries will have a cost of registration, and the burden is on the founders and is on the folks who are introducing the DAO into the ecosystem. And I think there's still a lot of merit in plugging a lot of gaps in the existing financial system that's been hemorrhaged with cost and fees and structures and inefficiencies. I think it's a great first step. And I'm all in favor for it, because it forces people to be liable and think through this in terms of doing all the right things for code audits and ensuring there's no challenges that we have just discussed with the DAOs that we have seen in the past. And if there is an oversight, then there's somebody accountable for it and not the community that's paying for it, if that makes sense.
Makes a lot of sense. And interesting enough, that the minute you see that occurring and it becomes accepted as a legal entity in some form or other, the ability for traditional industry to start interacting with it, investing in it, donating to it, participating in it, grows enormously, because all of a sudden there's an entity that they can cope with. You know, to a degree, we must realize that we don't operate in this space like an island. It has to interface to a degree at different times with traditional finance. And if it can do that, then you may see DAOs become global entities and have enormous capabilities with great efficiencies. So on that subject then, you know, an organization, are they all going to be ZKs, zero knowledge members? Is there an opportunity then, if you've got an autonomous organization that wants to make decisions to do certain things that members need to vote upon, are we going to see lobbying? Are we going to see people working together, and do they know each other? What does it look like that in a standard DAO?
That's a brilliant question. I have to unpack that in several layers. So just give me a few minutes on this, Derek. So a few things, right? One is the question that we have challenged Wyoming and the states who've tried to pass regulation, because we are dealing with truly global systems. Ethereum is a global network. Bitcoin is a global network. Solana and all the layer ones are global networks. And they aspire to bet again in this conversation of nation states, comparing blockchain to nation states that we discussed. We said, you know, hey, these blockchain networks are competing for capital, competing for talent, competing for the digital natives to come to the platform, irrelevant and regardless of the boundaries that we have maintained in our traditional world. And so when you're building a DAO and the DAO is required to be registered with Wyoming or let's say Australia, well, that's a problem in my opinion, because in many cases, you know, the DAO will not just operate in Wyoming because it's a global system. So when things go wrong, do you have to sue the company in Wyoming? And at that point, with the existing legal framework that we have as an Australian citizen, you may have certain protections, but, and as an American citizen, I may have certain protections, but I cannot, you know, it's a huge challenge for me to go to the Australian ecosystem and jurisdictional sort of boundaries and cross. So it's a little haphazardly done, I think, from that perspective.
Yes.
So that's one. Second thing is, you talked about zero knowledge, and that's a great point, because there's a lot of investment going into this from many layer one networks, because we see that as a true future. That we have been envisioning this world in terms of the true element of pseudonymous transactions, ability for me to be able to have CBDC, do KYC, but still engage in what I do with cash transactions and have the choice between the two. And once you reach a certain threshold, the system itself should be able to provide the support to the regulatory and compliance frameworks that's implemented globally. But let's go step back a little bit. And I'd like to discern between smart contracts and DAOs, because your question stems from understanding what they are at a very basic level, right? So blockchain runs code. At the very basic level, if you realize Bitcoin didn't have any, with Taproot, there's still avenues for smart contracts, but all Bitcoin did was move Bitcoin between two. So early days, they had small set of simple operations, maintaining transactions, like moving Bitcoin from Nitin to Derek, That's all they did. Comes along Ethereum introducing programmability, and this programmability lent to ability for us to be able to run code on blockchain and implement business rules, things like escrow, things like custody, and saying if I'm sending money to Derek and every transaction has a duality, which means I just don't send money to Derek, I'm expecting something in return. You could perform some intelligent functions in the system that allowed the neutral digital third party or digital counterparty to maintain escrow of your asset and only release the asset once the other digital asset, whether it's a digital real estate or digital car, has been transferred on or off chain, right? And so smart contracts were evolved. They're defined as essentially autonomous machines because they are bots that are contracts between the parties stored in the blockchain. So if Nitin wants to send money to Derek and I want to go in a certain way, I pick a smart contract that meets my needs and I send the money through a smart contract, and the smart contract becomes sort of the pipe that transforms and conforms to the rules that maintains, and that provides avenue for many people to provide. And that's what smart contracts is. And from smart contract comes DAOs, which takes this autonomous machines and creates them into organizations, which means they have a structure, they have a treasury, they have ability to perform swap functions. And these are all codified functions which have to adhere to certain rules. So it gives us tremendous flexibility to codify all the banking rules, all the counterparty elements of what has been enforced by the banking system for verification, validation, the FATF rules, and so on and so forth. Right. And so the first concept of DAO, of course, was proposed in, as you rightly mentioned, 2015, 2016, by Dan Larimer, who was one of the early founders with Vitalik and Ethereum. And the question then became that, do we envision a world where we have a true transactional element between two parties without a bank or without, you know, third parties? And that way you could, me on a global network, I could transact with a DAO, and I could have a global access to all the participants as long as they're enabling to interact with this DAO, and DAO became corporations on the blockchain network. And so that was the vision of how this entire, you know, evolution evolved. The question then became with zero knowledge, and zero knowledge is an interesting technology. In fact, we call it family of zero knowledge spectrum, where you have ZK snarks and ZK knowledge, you know, zero knowledge proofs. So these are like proofs which says that, you know, we've done this in identity world as well, to say, hey, I need to go and get into a bar, but do I really need to give my driver's license, which has all my details, yes, to a bouncer who's, you know, an hourly, you know, no offense to bouncers, they do an important role, but they're not exactly they don't have our privacy and our safeguarding of our identity in mind because they are doing a performed function. But all they need to know if I'm of drinking age and let me in. Similarly, when I buy alcohol. And so the notion of zero knowledge came across to say, can I still transact and do my business function without revealing a lot of information about what I have? And it has business implications. It has competitive advantage implications to say, if a bank were to disclose how much it has in its coffers, its liquidity position, well, then it becomes an interesting challenge for banks because they can become an acquisition target. And for individuals, if I were to show how much I have as a wealth, I could be target of many other yes, hacks and vulnerabilities because I would attract. So zero knowledge came into existence to preserve privacy, to ensure, and there are actually a set of technologies like homomorphic encryption, fully homomorphic encryption, a zero knowledge proof, knowledge proofs in general, differential sort of, a cryptography. So there's a whole family of these technologies that are meant to provide privacy preserving technologies. The beauty of zero knowledge proofs is that it allows me to be able to move transactions between me and Derek. And if I'm sending Derek money to prevent double spend, which is what blockchains do really well, is give Derek assurance to say, hey, if I'm sending money to you, there's no fraud, it's the real token, and I have the token that I can send to you, or I have enough balance that I can send to you without you knowing a lot about. It provides a systemic verification of this whole thing. So when you talk about zero knowledge organizations, it takes to the next level to say, if every entity who's transacting, not just me transacting with Derek and relying upon a smart contract, but there's an end-to-end security protected by zero knowledge, I think it's a very profound concept. And to get to that point, I think technology has to evolve both from economics perspective, but also ensuring that there's a wider understanding of what zero knowledge is. But that's the world we're heading in, Derek. I think you hit on something which is such a profound and such a current issue in the technical community, is how do we implement all this without breaking the proverbial bank? Because it's anytime you include encryption, it takes a lot of compute power. And as you know, with, with the rising Ethereum gas costs, the focus is how do you reduce the compute power so it becomes cheaper to process transactions. So I'll stop at that. I know I have a lot to unpack there, but that's the premise of this.
There's a lot to unpack there. And one of the interesting things with zero knowledge ID is, of course, it's wonderful when, you know, when that beautiful young woman turns up at a bar and doesn't have to hand over her license and her ID and her address where she lives to the bouncer. No question about it. But if you're in a DAO and someone's lobbying you because they want the DAO to do a certain thing, and it's a zero knowledge environment, it provides two things. A, you might be able to take that lobbying on its merit. Or B, actually, you don't know what that other human's really trying to do or who that other human is. And there might be a nefarious reason for that to occur. And you don't know that through a zero knowledge environment. So there's that that perplexing conundrum that sits there. But nonetheless, we've essentially, what you're saying there is in a DAO, entities can lobby each other. They can communicate with each other and they can nurture or influence the way everyone votes, not dissimilar to that of a council environment or in any other organization. Is that what you're saying here in most of the DAOs?
That's essentially what I'm saying is the ability for them to, if I register as a DAO in onto one jurisdiction, then there's certain protections that I have to offer, and I have to offer the same protection to. So at the end of the day, if DAOs become corporations, which is what they are,
yes,
on blockchain network, then as I'm expecting, minus the social media chatter that's happening, I expect my bank to protect my privacy. You expect your DAO to protect the same level of protection that you're expecting from your traditional bank, even though they may be additional entities. And so to enforce some of those elements, and DAOs protecting themselves, because DAO also, like a corporation, have a treasury, have a governance mechanism. And while it's meant to be transparent, I think that there are certain things that need to be protected for the sake of privacy. I think that's exactly what I mean, Derek.
Okay, very good. So here's another thing. There's many uses of DAOs and we don't have enough time to cover them all. So I'm going to try and race through a couple and really get your views on it. And one of the questions I would ask is, do DAOs make good investors? So Portal Asset Management is considering at a time in the future that it might establish a DAO. And that will give investors exposure to all three of our funds. And as you know, we've got a fund of digital funds, which is a relatively low volatility fund called the Portal Digital Fund. We've got a fund called Horizon, which is an index fund, equally weighted top 25 tokens. And the third fund is going to be called Radiance. And Radiance is a deep dive direct investment fund. They all have different levels of volatility. And, in a DAO environment, people may be able to turn around and say, that's great, I'll buy one. I'll invest in one, or in fact, I'll invest in all three, and that'll give me a spread across this environment. But a DAO that we would consider would be one that would have the ability to have direction from us as fund managers, that we know that all of a sudden, the group doesn't vote to buy a beautiful tropical island in Indonesia, which I've got nothing against. I love the idea, but it's probably not for this particular area. So there's an opportunity to have a DAO that can be driven with a set of regulations that will enable a directive to occur. So it will keep it outside certain areas and provide input within it. But then there's actually fully autonomous DAOs. And already there's a group called DAO Invest, which is, as they define themselves, as a long-term project that has the ability to pivot based upon the decisions of the community. So maybe that one could invest in an island in Indonesia, but all of the, depending on their smart contracts, of course, but all of the transactions and the community LP holdings are verifiable on Ethereum, BSC, and Polychain networks. And any changes to liquidity pools and the roadmap are voted by community members. So there's a possibility of having a DAO with a general direction and a base philosophy, and there's a possibility of having a totally open DAO. I would be amazed to see how well a community can invest versus a focused discipline. We don't know that yet, particularly, and there's no real evidence of that because there's not enough DAOs operating both as a directive DAO or a fully autonomous DAO. Do you have any examples, Nitin?
Yeah, I do. And I think just to, as a, since we're talking about Portal, just as a reminder to the audience that, you know, this is not investment advice. So we yep. are having two gentlemen having discussion in terms of unpacking the industry and how,
and for
education purposes. So a few things, Derek. Great example, right? So if you look at MakerDAO, it's a perfect example. MakerDAO started out as a quasi-decentralized entity using decentralized infrastructure and providing liquidity to the market and giving you the ability to collateralize your assets and create a stable coin and maintain the balance between the two to maintain price stability in the system. And Christian Ruwansen, I think, as you know, stepped down as a CEO and said, okay, we're going to completely decentralize this, which means over time, they went down the path from quasi-decentralization to complete decentralization to say, let this be community-driven. So any decisions, whether the decision is about treasury and decision in terms of distribution of the earnings, because DAOs as corporations are making fees as they transact, yes. and distribution of fees to the shareholders, which are the token holders of sorts. So I think that's a path which I always give as an example. So I think what you're talking about is definitely conceivable that you could, in case of Portal, we could potentially have a decentralized autonomous organization that acts as an Uber investment entity yes. or investment advisor that gives you a choice and allows the community, if we decide to go down the path, because some DAOs are only transactional DAOs, which allows you to be able to transact on the collective fee. And they're not exactly yet for a governance mechanism, but some DAO, and some examples again include Curve DAO and yield farming is a perfect example. And what Aave is, that the community governs in terms of how they want to monetize this. And if they get too greedy, then the community punishes them because they lose transaction volume. So they have to maintain a balance between how do they maintain the treasury? How is the profits distributed? How do they maintain balance by burning some tokens to maintain the value of the tokens people have? And I think that's something it has been nothing short of brilliant in terms of ideas and true financial innovation, not just technical innovation, but financial innovation coming to the place to say, if we are building a community-driven decision-making process through a governance mechanism, then let us burn, instead of issuing more tokens and more profits, let's burn tokens to increase the value of the tokens that already have as one mechanism to maintain a balance until community votes otherwise, and we can change that structure at a later time. So it's not written in gold. So I think many of the like MakerDAO and Curve DAO and yield farming and of course we cannot not talk about the constitutional DAO, which has been all over the news this week, and the which is an attempt to buy one of the 500 copies of the original distribution of the Constitution of the United States. Truly, it was a DAO that was meant for crowdfunding. It was fundraising to procure a collective ownership of a is both historic and symbolic artifact, a Constitution of the United States, which, and it was an amazing show of, they were able to raise $43 million in span of less than a week, which is unheard of in the industry altogether. And Christie's, which was the auction house, accepted crypto as a collateral because they have to look into funds availability and ascertaining funds before they let parties bid for these art, or in this case, which to me was a sign of times to say that this is taking shape. So your definition of DAO could be anything, could be a community-driven DAO, could be a DAO that's self-governed, could be a DAO that could be simply said, look, we're using this DAO as an automated way to process your payments, nothing more, nothing less, which is not exactly fully decentralized in that context.
So lastly, we're talking about these autonomous organizations that have smart contracts and a view of what they do. So far, we've been talking about what they do in regards to doing transactions and they do investments. But importantly, you could create DAOs for charities and you could create Yes. DAOs for environmental aspects of it. And we talked about that the other week when we were talking about some charity Yeah. opportunities to be able to help out a person that is doing just that, seeking to be able to provide funds across to developing nations and getting it direct to the end users. So what examples are there of these sort of gift DAOs out there, Nitin?
I think that's a great example of how we converge the DAO, the blockchain, the DeFi and NFT space. There were a bunch of projects. I think Virgin Atlantic had a project in which they weren't trying to save the whales and they built an NFT structure where people could buy an NFT. And the NFT was a part of, again, NFT is an asset. It's a non-fungible mm-hmm. asset, non-fungible token. Mm-hmm. You could own an NFT that shows your support for saving rainforest or saving, for example, whales in the Pacific. And you could contribute in Ether, and that Ether could be locked in DAO. eventually could be part of the DeFi, which could convert into fiat and eventually fund whatever they need to do, which would show global support. And so social DAOs and DAOs for fundraising, both for good cause and for global participation, has been on the rise. And I think you begin to see this in convergence of, and this is again, an evolutionary process, not happened by accident, that the notion of NFT is similar to what you would do with World Wildlife Fund. If you remember back in the day, you would make a contribution, you would get an artifact that said that you made a contribution, which is a feel-good element. But this is going to the next level to say, here's an NFT, you can trade this if you want to trade this, but this NFT is raising money to save the whales, to save the wildlife, and to clean the oceans, and to do all the good for the planet. Yes. And that movement began last year, which was rapidly raised. I think there's hundreds of millions of dollars raised for different causes that people believe in from that perspective. So I think it's phenomenal. And the beauty of this is velocity. Just like Constitution DAO was able to raise $43 million in, I would say, less than a week or just a few days. Imagine that the global movement of assets and value to do something good, whether it's saving a rainforest and protecting our environment and investing into right power structures. I think are perfect examples where the blockchain as a foundational infrastructure facilitates transaction of NFTs with the DeFi using DAO as an intermediary. I think it's all coming together, in my opinion, if that makes sense.
It's a perfect way of us being able to sort of complete our discussion around DAOs today, because what you're saying there is absolutely the case. It's all together. It's getting to a point now that you couldn't talk about this world of DeFi. You couldn't talk about cryptocurrencies or digital assets without realizing that DAOs are a core part of it and will probably be a continually large part of it. They're the essence of the philosophy anyway, because they're smart contract driven organizations, which is the essence of what decentralization is about. And yet again, it's probably going to be up to the imagination of humans, breaking away from the concept that there has to be some centralized governance organization directing them, that will be able to create DAOs, which hopefully will see span oceans and countries and politics and race to be able to do good and to be able to provide people with the investment to participate both in investments and in charities all around the world autonomously and without government interference. My gosh, it kind of sounds like a John Lennon song, doesn't it? You know, imagine.
That's right. Really does. It does. And I'll say one more thing, Derek, and prior to this call, we were talking about keeping a pulse on this industry, and there's so much going on. There's so much of information coming through. How do we keep up with it? And I would say, towards the last end of this discussion, these are fundamentals. At the end of the day, NFT is an asset class, and Bitcoin is an asset class. Ethereum is an asset class. Aave is an asset class. And you go back to fundamentals, the basics of when we start this journey and why we're doing it. And you have technology morphing into application of that, whether it's a DAO or a smart contract or an NFT token or a governance token. It's nothing but a form factor of what we have envisioned this about 13 years back. So I would leave it at that for now, Derek.
Agreed. Nicely put. All right, Nitin, great to chat with you again. Great for us to throw ideas around about what DAOs are. Another great week in this particular world of high frequency, high speed cryptocurrency. And look forward to seeing you next week, same time, different topic. And of course, everyone, please feel free to subscribe and to follow us on all the main podcasts or on YouTube along the way. Bye for now. Everyone stay well. See you next week.
Take care, guys. Bye.
See you.